Hello, you're listening to Booth Talk from the Aftermovie Diner. And if, like us, you're a lover of the films The Fog, Halloween 3, Night of the Creeps, Creepshow, Lethal Weapon, Maniac Cop, you keep naming them. There are so many great ones. And if you're also a lover of awesome facial hair that slays the ladies, then you are going to absolutely love our interview today with none other than the huge genre legend that is Tom Atkins. If you grew up in the 80s and 90s loving genre films like we did, then his face and his acting ability and his style and his coolness will be all too familiar to you. Well, I'm here to say that the man is also an awesome storyteller and conversationalist, so I cannot wait to share my chat with the legend, Tom Atkins.
Sitting in freezing ass south of Pittsburgh at 5 degrees, looking out the office window at the woodpecker and nuthatch and tufted titmouses and chickadees and juncos and cardinals, and everybody's hitting the shit out of our suet and seed feeder. Snow on the ground. It's just wonderful. Where are you? Where are you?
Although I'm English, I actually live in New York City, so it is equally bitter cold.
It's worse there.
Yeah.
It's even worse.
Wind lashed. Snow came down. We had about just shy of a foot yesterday, I think, but it was sort of light flurries, so it just sort of blew everywhere. It didn't accumulate until people started to shovel it and push it to the side of the road. And then of course, in the city, it just then turns into big, black, brown, unappealing sludge. It doesn't stay nice white.
I know.
But
I know. True for you. I lived there for a long time ago, for 8 years. So, yeah, I love New York. I miss New York. I don't miss L.A. much, but I do miss New York.
Yeah, I've been here about 9 years so far, so this is not my first rodeo in terms of the winter in New York.
Right. Don't you love it in the summer when it smells like garbage and dog poop?
Well, this is what I always say to people.
Maybe they're better at picking it up now. I don't know, but in the 70s, it was pretty grim.
Well, this is what I say to people whenever spring starts coming about and people say, oh, yeah, it's going to be summer soon. I'm like, you forget how horrible the summers are. I'd much rather fall, winter, and spring than I would summer in New York. Fall is beautiful.
True for you.
Spring is great, but summer is just unbearable. I'd rather this temperature than the 90 degrees with the, with the rotting garbage.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. You get used to all the seasons when you live here, and thank goodness we still have them. Some parts of the world don't anymore.
True. So. Yeah. Yeah.
So, look, thank you ever so much, Tom, for being on the After Movie Diner today. We're big fans of your work here, and we're really grateful that you wanted to just talk through your career with us and for our listeners. So, thanks for that.
Oh, sure. Happy to do it.
Oh, that's excellent, sir. Excellent. So in terms of acting in front of a camera, you started out on TV doing both guest spots and recurring roles on well-known sort of action, detective, and drama series. What got you your start in acting and television?
Oh, I moved to California. That's what did it. I was living up in New York and in East Haven, Connecticut on Cozy Beach Avenue, working at the Long Wharf Theater for 6 seasons and on and off Broadway in New York, back and forth, and spending the summers up at Williamstown, the best summer theater. I don't even like to call it that. It was so great back then. I don't know what it's like now, but I spent 10 or 11 summers up there and decided about 1973 that I was had a wonderful life. I was enjoying the hell out of myself. It was the 60s and 70s, and everybody was having a great time, and but I had a dying VW in the driveway and a shack that I rented that I liked, but I couldn't afford to buy it. And I thought, for this theater shit, I'm going to L.A. and make some money. So I did, and that's what I did. I went out there in 74 and started working on Harry O. first.
Yeah.
The David Janssen show that he shot down in San Diego on Coronado Island. Well, the set was on Coronado Island, his house, supposedly, and he was building a sailboat in the backyard or repairing one or something.
Yeah.
And we were all cops, and it was great. Well, he was a private eye, and I was a cop. And
yeah.
Manny was another cop. And then Rockford Files and other stuff.
Yeah. So was it interesting, kind of, because you were both sort of a day player and also a featured performer in all those different kind of TV series, was it interesting to see all those different sets and different stars and how they work differently? Or was it just very much sort of one job after another, very kind of similar?
I had a recurring role on Harry O and a recurring role on Rockford, and then would guest star on other things, and had a regular role on Serpico, which was a short-lived thing. Oh, no, I loved the work. I never loved L.A., but I loved the work and all the people involved and all the crews, the directors, my fellow actors, the stars. Jimmy Garner was my favorite, one of the finest, most underrated actors ever. He was just a great guy, wonderful man, wonderful guy.
Yeah.
And David Janssen also was a delight to work with. Great fun. Him and me and Manny. I can't remember Manny's last name. We used to go over to a tequila joint down in San Diego and have drinks after work.
Nice.
God, wonderful memories. I love being out there, and I enjoyed all of it, truly.
Yeah.
It was just great, great, great fun. And I had no responsibilities, you know. I didn't have any children, didn't have a family, so it was pure good fun. And yeah. I was lucky in that I was... From the moment I decided I wanted to be an actor, and I was somehow able to make my living as an actor all my life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the dream, right? That's the best. That's the best thing. Just to keep
it
at
is.
It and keep doing
yeah.
it, and yeah, find your. Find your path and find your niche. Yeah. No, it's fantastic. I noticed in researching to talk to you today was that one of your earliest sort of feature-length roles was in a creature feature disaster film made for TV called Tarantulas. After that, once you go into feature films, a lot of your feature films would become kind of well-known genre work, like The Fog and Escape from New York and Creepshow, Night of the Creeps, Maniac Cop, things like that. Were you always a fan of those sort of cult genre horror films, or is that just where your career led you? Yeah.
No, I was always a fan. No longer, I'm not a fan anymore, but I was a fan, and but my whole life as an actor and all of my work has all been rather serendipitous in its, I never sought, so many roles in horror films or genre work, but they just came to me. They happened. And it was not a plan, but I was a great fan. I loved The Thing from Another World, Howard Hawks, film from 1951 or three, I forget which.
That's a great one. Yeah.
One of the, with James Arness, was the monster from another planet, and all these guys were stuck up at the North Pole and fighting it and trying to understand it and not able to understand it and finally having to destroy it. And I love that film. I truly loved it. It was one of my favorite, but I saw a lot of good movies. I just realized the other day, some of the, my favorite films were, kind of fantasy films that I remember my mom taking me to see when I was a little boy, and I was I'm old, you know, and in 1947 two of my favorite films I saw in movie theaters, Stairway to Heaven, and they both starred David Niven.
Yeah,
Stairway to Heaven and The Bishop's Wife. And they were both kind of fantasy. Cary Grant was an angel in the one, and David Niven was dead, but his shipmates came back to Earth and said, you know, when they went to get into heaven, he wasn't there, so they had to come back and sort that all out. And it was two delightful, wonderful films. And The Thing from Another World in 51 or 3 or wherever. But I loved doing all those movies, The Fog, Escape from New York, Halloween 3, Night of the Creeps, my favorite. And though I never had a real plan to do all that stuff, it just sort of came to me.
Yeah, so when you said in the lead up to that you don't like the horror anymore, is it that you don't like the ones they're making now, or you've just sort of, you no longer kind of go back and watch those older horror films?
That's true. I don't care for the ones they're making now. I don't like the whole franchise of Saw or whatever it is, where it's all so relentlessly gory.
Yeah, there's no style to it.
You don't care. And there's nobody in the movie you care about,
right?
That you root for, that you hope will get out the other end alive, and that's why I don't like them. However, I loved Get Out,
yes,
which
that was
is kind of a horror movie and wonderful characters and story, and. I'll tell you, this past spring, I was down in Augusta, Georgia.
Yeah.
Doing a film called Encounter. Paul Solomoff wrote it and directed it, and Luke Hemsworth, Anna Hutchison, Vincent Ward, Chris Schauerman, whole bunch of wonderful people. A great Irish guy too. Damn, forget his name, but he was. We had a delightful time making a sci-fi movie called Encounter down there in Augusta, Georgia, for a month or so, and it's all put together, and I think is going to screen at the Berlin Film Festival.
Oh, very good.
Coming up in February.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. So if anyone's out there, they should definitely take a look at that one. I agree with you. I think a lot of times horror fans kind of get put in this bracket of people who just sort of like gore. And actually what it is we like the stories, you know, we like the characters, we like the suspense, we like the tension. It's those things that we like about the genre. And yes, of course, the special effects, especially the stuff in the 80s and stuff that they were doing, was fantastic. It's not necessarily what you show up for. You show up for a good story, and if there's other stuff as well, then that's sort of the icing on the cake. Speaking of which, saying The Thing from Another World is one of your favorites. I know you've worked a lot with John Carpenter. What did you feel about his quasi remake? I mean, I know he worked more from the book, but what did you feel about his version of the thing?
I just saw bits and pieces of it the other day. Everybody, all All the guys I knew in L.A. were in that movie, except me, and it pissed me off that I wasn't in it in some way. But Dickie Masser and Richard Dysart and David Clemen Kurt. Everybody was in that. I remember talking with John up in, he had a place for a while in Malibu on the beach, and he and Adrienne were together, and we were all up there shooting the breeze one day, and he said he was going to make that movie. We were talking about how much I loved it as a kid, and he loved it, and he was going to remake it. And though he didn't say much about, maybe he did say he was going to go more to the book, and I didn't know the book. I only knew the movie.
Yeah.
That I saw. So I didn't care for his version. I like mine better.
Sure.
The old one. Yeah.
I think
the old one better.
It depends what sort of decade you grow up watching the movies. I think you treasure those more. You know, a lot of those Carpenter movies and Romero movies and various other things are now either being remade or ripped off right now. And, you know, my generation is saying, we don't like that. We like what we saw when we were growing up.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing.
Well, though, I will say, you know, it turned out good. I think he did all right with it, but I personally didn't care for it. But I loved The Fog. I loved making The Fog. I loved working with John on The Fog. I love watching Tommy Lee Wallace down the end of a street up there in northern, up above San Francisco, where we shot it, in Bodega Bay and Point Reyes and all around there. But Tommy at the end of a street with two little fog machines and a couple of fans trying to create this threatening fog that was rolling into town. Oh my God, it took hours and hours because they didn't have CGI stuff to throw up on the screen then. That was part of the charm, I think, of making the film. Now, they did remake The Fog recently, a few years ago, and I have never seen it, and I have never heard a single good word about it.
No.
That it's full of CGI, but it doesn't compare to the original film that we made.
Yeah. I've never, the thing that I've always wondered, once you got recorded media, once we got VHS and DVD and Blu-ray and now streaming and the ability to watch older movies, I don't understand the appeal of remaking them because they're readily available. Remaking a film from the 50s made sense in the 80s because you couldn't get hold of it. But now you can get hold of it.
Right.
Why are you remaking it? I've never understood it, but it's what Hollywood's doing. How did that role in The Fog come about? Because it was sort of your first collaboration with John, right?
How did it? I think it came about because Adrienne and my first wife, Garn Stevens, and Adrienne Barbeau were in the original Grease on Broadway together. And we were great friends. Adrienne and I became great friends. So she said, I'm dating this guy, John Carpenter. He makes movies, and I want you to meet him. And he's his movie Halloween is going to air. They're having a screening at the Directors Guild over in Hollywood. Come and see it, and you'll meet him that night, and we'll have drinks or whatever. And so we went, took Jeannie, a friend of Garn's, and the two girls sat on either side of me. Adrienne was somewhere in the back with John. And half the night, they covered their eyes and said, can we look? And I would say, yeah, go ahead. Look now. And they would look and go, oh, you son of a bitch. Right as somebody's being stabbed or something. And it was like that all night. It was a terrifying, wonderful, wonderful film.
Yeah.
And they both leaned across me after, you know, the credits, everybody's applauding and everything is over. And they said to each other, we cannot allow Adrienne to marry this guy.
Right.
So we, and I think that's kind of mainly how we did let him marry her. We couldn't prevent it. And we went to their wedding up in Northern California. We were just good friends. He knew I was an actor and had seen some of my stuff, and he offered me the role in The Fog.
Yeah, and it's fantastic.
Maybe I was the second choice. I have no idea. He might have offered it to Kurt first. I don't know. Maybe somebody else couldn't do it. All I know is I was thankful to do it. Happy to do it.
Well, it led to many collaborations between you and John. Not one of which has been a film that, while I know lots of people have loved forever, when it first came out, was not particularly, I think, either understood or successful, but went on to become a fan favorite, certainly in recent years, and that was Halloween 3. I think just because originally people were expecting a Michael Myers story. Now we know John's reasoning and that story behind how that film came about and why he went in a different direction is sort of more readily known. So I think people accept that movie more now. But what was it like making that, and how much was, I know John obviously produced and wrote it, but how much was he involved, and just do you have any stories from the set of Halloween 3?
He was involved. Him and Deborah Hill, I think, produced it and put it together. They were involved in the casting of it and giving it to Tommy Lee Wallace to direct. And it was, as many people know, but many people also don't know, that it was John's original intention to make Halloween movies all of his life and to make everyone a different story, an anthology of Halloween stories. And the money people, or whoever were the money behind Halloween, said, no, we don't want to do that because Michael Myers makes way too much money. Just make Michael Myers Halloween movies. But you already have this one kind of in the shoot and greenlit, so you can make that, but don't make any others. And a lot of people say, well, why don't you call it just Season of the Witch and get the Halloween thing off there? But they insisted on having the Halloween part of the title for their money machine franchise. So it didn't help the film. I think it would have maybe done better had it been just released as Season of the Witch.
But don't you love those decisions where they say, well, it can't be a Halloween movie without Michael Myers. However, if you're going to make a movie, you have to call it Halloween. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, right? One contradicts the other.
But it's their, I know. Yeah, I agree. And but we had a great time making it. Stacey Nook, and I thought, was delightful. We were just forming it all up, and Tommy called me and said, we're going to see we're down to about three or four girls that we're looking for, for the Miss Grimbridge role. And would you come in and read with them? I said, yeah, sure. So I went out there to the office and read with, I can't remember the other girls, but I know as soon as Stacy came in and she read, and we all said, oh yeah, that's it. Shit. Feels good to me. It seems right. So we went with her, and she was a delight to work with, and we had a good time shooting it. Vicki Warlock and all the boys.
Yeah, indeed. Well, have you noticed the fan reaction changing over the years to that film?
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. People used to come up to me and say they hated it because they were looking for Michael Myers and he never showed up and they were so pissed off. But now they all just seem to embrace it and really like it. And I have numerous fans come up now and say, it's my very favorite Halloween movie, and I watch it every year.
Yeah, it's funny how that changes. I think that what happened somewhere along the line was not only did people understand, like you told us, the story behind what John was intending for Halloween films, but also I think when people look back at it, they see your work. So they see they're fans of Maniac Cop, they're fans of Night of the Creeps, they're fans of these movies where you star in these fantastic genre films, and they're looking for another one, and they come across Halloween 3. And then I think Halloween 3 is elevated by it being you in terms of fans' eyes and in terms of fans enjoying the film. Yeah. People love your performance in that and the chemistry you have
with the other actors, I think. That's nice of you. Thanks,
John. You were saying at the beginning you're actually from one of the horror capitals of the U.S., Pittsburgh. I'm a big personal fan of Pittsburgh. I've got a lot of great friends in Pittsburgh. Obviously, it's home to George A. Romero, Tom Savini, and others. You worked several times with George, and was that always a goal, like living in Pittsburgh? Were you aware of his films and those films coming out and thinking, one day I'd like to work with him? Or was that, again, just a serendipitous thing?
It was a serendipitous thing, and it was I have a bizarre story. There's a friend of mine, rest his soul, Paul Raley, who was old fraternity brother. He come up to New York and shared an apartment for a little bit while I was up there, and then moved out, got going on his own. He was in advertising, and he helped put together a commercial to shoot here in Pittsburgh. And I came into Pittsburgh for, some kind of a fraternity gathering, a party or something that we were all going to have for some holiday or something. And he said, we're shooting a beer commercial and you'd be perfect in it. And you can, if you'll do it, you know, I'm telling you right now, you don't have to audition for it. You could just do it. And it turns out George Romero shot it. I didn't know George Romero then, and I didn't like the beer they were doing the commercial for, and it didn't pay that much money. It was a local beer, and I said, no, fuck it, Paul. I'd rather go to the party. I don't give a shit about the commercial. And he said, well, okay. But it was...
That could have been your first collaboration, I guess.
It would have been. It would have been. And then, but I was up in... and this was early day. I might have still been at the American Academy. I'm not sure, because soon out of the Academy, and I was working, up in Long Wharf Theater doing three shows, and went over to see Night of the Living Dead at a movie theater right next to Yale campus. So it's full of all these young Yalies, and people are howling when it started with laughter, laughing at the Pittsburgh accent and Chili Billy Cardilly being a newsman and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, oh my God, there they are. They're up in Evans City at the cemetery. Jesus Christ. It looks like Amateurville. And then it got scarier and scarier and quieter and quieter in the theater. And then they're screaming, and then they're terrified. And I thought, wow, I want to work with this guy. This is good stuff. And then I did. And then, you know, we got together, I guess. Creepshow might have been the first. I'm not sure. I don't remember. I think so. It was Creepshow.
Yeah, I met George on it. And then Two Evil Eyes, I think, right, is the next one?
Yeah, uh-huh. Two Evil Eyes, and then we did three. Bruiser up in Canada. Yeah, but it was, Creepshow, and I remember talking with them. We had met by then, and he knew me from Pittsburgh and my work around stuff, but he sent me the script, and I read the script, and then we had this meeting, him and his wife Chris at the time, and he said, is there anybody in there you would like to play? And I said, yeah, I would love to play that guy that gets eaten by the swamp shit, the guy that's all on his own out there. He said, well, you can't. Now, Steven and I wrote this thing, and he's a big help on it, and he wants to play that role. So would you do me a favor and play the dad in the wraparound in the beginning and the end? And I said, yeah, sure, be happy to. So we had a lovely time shooting that. All my stuff shot here in the Berg.
Yeah.
So it was nice to be able to come back here and do that. And oh, he was a great guy, George. I loved him. Wonderful, wonderful man. Wonderful guy. Great teddy bear of a guy. Very lovely filmmaker. Knew what he wanted to do, and just kind of gave you the framework to do it within, and then let you do it. Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, it's one of the things we always hear about the guys who make these movies. You know, I think there's that people that panic about horror movies, and they try and like ban them all the time because they must be the work of crazy people. But actually, the people behind them, from everything I've heard from all the genre stars I've spoken to and the directors I've met, they all seem to be intelligent, well-spoken, creative, lovely, you know, lovely guys. Mostly.
True. Yeah, they really are. I just recently met, oh my God, no, I'm not going to remember his name, but you're a Brit, you might.
Okay.
He was a child star.
Oh, okay. What film was he in? Do you remember?
No. He was in The Children of the Damned. He was the little blonde boy lead whose eyes, you know, glowed, and they destroyed people with George Sanders. But now he's, you know, he might be 70 or late 60s, early 70s, or somewhere in the 70s, and met him at a horror convention up in Cleveland, Strongville. Okay. And he was just a delightful guy.
Yeah.
And kind of got out of incredibly, you know, intelligent, bright man who got out of acting after he only made three, four films. So, and then I became an architect and now lives in Spain with a wife and is kind of retired from that too, but does consulting work every once in a while. I find that people behind horror movies, I don't know the people behind Saw.
No, neither do I.
kind of films, but the ones that I do know are really, really nice people, although, and bright and intelligent. George was always trying to get, you know, deeper meanings into his films, societal problems and cultural problems that we are always so loath to deal with. He somehow managed to get into his films and and kind of try to sort a way out of things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see that in John Carpenter's work. You see that in George Romero's work. Wes Craven, obviously. Yeah. And then, you know, although it's not as evident in a film like Maniac Cop, Larry Cohen in his scripts does tend to throw in little bits of like social commentary, whether it's the brute force of the police or whether it's a commentary on films like Dirty Harry or whatever it is with Maniac Cop. There's certain stuff in there. What an interesting film that is in terms of the cast. I mean, such an ensemble cast of genre stars in that film. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous who keeps turning up. What's your memory of making Bill Lustig's Maniac Cop?
Oh my God, my memory is mainly sitting in a bar talking to an actor. I mean, it was a scene in the film
with William Smith, isn't it?
Yes, it was. It was William Smith and me sitting in a bar, and I loved that scene. I loved William Smith, and it was great. Doing that scene, it's also one of my main memories is Lustig himself, just an odd man, and not real communicative, but interesting enough, I guess. But Bruce Campbell and I see each other from time to time, and we always laugh, but Bruce says, "What the fuck was Lustig doing? he hires you to star. You're the star of the first one. And in a half hour, you're going out the window dead on top of a cab."
Yeah.
And I'm a co-star in that. And then I'm the star of the second one. And I'm buying a newspaper at a newsstand and somebody stabs me to death. You know, just a little ways into the film. For what? For what? Reed? Why? He said it had absolutely nothing to do with anything. I'm dead. You're dead. I'm dead.
The only person who gets out of that franchise alive is Robert Davi, who does the second and the third one. Robert Davi gets to live. He's the only one, really. Everyone else gets to... Well, and Robert Zadar, who played Matt Cordell, even though he's dead already, he comes back and back and back.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But no, the first one's got that good bait and switch, I guess. It's horrible to see you go, but it's fun to suddenly be in this whole other movie with Bruce as the lead.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And I see Larry from time to time, too, at these horror conventions. And he's got good memories from those little chain of films. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's good, obviously, man. Been doing the rounds with his documentary, King Cohen. We're hopefully going to try and have him on the show in the new year. So, he's fantastic. I met him a couple of times, and he's a lovely guy.
I have to tell you, I'm about to go. I just realized I hadn't mentioned it, that I'm about to go back down to Augusta, Georgia, to do another this one, not a sci-fi film, but more a horror film. It's a kind of a thriller, murder, serial killer kind of thing that happens in a hospital, supposedly somewhere down in the bottom of the Carolinas during a hurricane.
Nice. Okay. Cool.
And I'm a doctor in the hospital and doing my best to help, not the star of it, but a real nice role. And it's, Michael Harrison, who's directing it. And I think, another woman and the guy wrote it. Maybe Harrison had something to do with the writing too. And it's called Poser.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
And it's, so it's got, it's a thriller, but it's got horror elements in it also.
Nice. Nice. And what is it you like about, because obviously you're, as I say, I'm looking at your IMDb, you've got Encounter coming out, you've got the one you were talking about earlier that's going to the Berlin Film Festival, and then this third one. What's it like now doing these films in 2017 and 2018? What's still the appeal for you?
Oh, I just like to keep my hand in.
Yeah.
I don't like to, I don't, I just saw... I always think, as you know, people will say, "Are you retired now?" And I say, "Well, no, not really. I'm, you know, I don't think you ever retire as an actor as long as you can remember the words. And someone's silly enough to hire you, you just keep doing it."
Yeah.
And I love the work. I love the camaraderie of the set. You know, the crew and everything, and I'm sure I'll be seeing a lot of the same people I saw while we made Encounter down there in Augusta. Will be on our set, and I don't know why Augusta is so hot.
Something about to do with tax in Georgia, tax relief in Georgia.
I'm sure it has to do with their tax incentive, that they give back to the film companies that come in. But film companies bring in a lot of money.
Yeah. It's so why Walking Dead shoots down
the
there.
State and the local. Yeah. What a great time we all had working on Encounter down there and living in the Perrin house, a little, it's a kind of a lovely old boarding house. Well, that's not the right word. It's a pretty grand place, but all their rooms, the whole, you know, Anna was in there, Luke was in there, I was in there, we were all in there, one room or another, and would change around depending on who left, who came back, who went away, who came back. But it was a lovely town. We didn't get near Augusta, the golf course. They weren't interested in in having us over to lunch or anything.
No.
So we didn't. They're pretty stodgy old bunch of guys.
Well, golfers tend to be, right?
yeah, they do.
You said earlier that your favorite of all your films, so therefore we have to talk about it, is Night of the Creeps. So obviously it's a great role for you. Obviously it incorporates sci-fi and horror and comedy and action and a whole bunch of stuff. Why don't you explain to us why it's your favorite? Do you go back and look at it often?
Just for all those reasons you just said, and we had more fun making that movie than any movie I've ever worked on in my life. At least I did.
Right.
I had more fun. I don't know about everybody else, but I think that feeling was shared by all of us. It was just a romp. Out there on a college campus and shooting all around L.A. in the alleys of North Hollywood, and I met Shane Black, and that's how I got into Lethal Weapon, because he was a dear friend of Fred Decker, and the writer director, and hung around the set a lot, and went over and met him one night, and Fred said, "This is my friend Shane Black," and Shane said, "Tom, I love your work, and I got a movie they're going to do it at Warner Brothers. I hope you could be in it. I'd love you to play the lead, but I know they won't do that. But you could, hopefully you could do something in it." And I did, and it was we just had a great time. And for the longest time, it languished because it didn't do well when it came out. I think it played a week in L.A. and a week in New York. And then 20 years later, Sony or somebody who owned it thought, well, shit, we can make a buck with this, because there's a whole bunch of people out there who want to see it, who really like it, and who it's developed this kind of cult following. So they sent us down to Austin, me and Jill and Jason and Steve Marshall from up in Canada, we all went down to Austin with Fred and did a special reel for the Blu-ray release. And oh God, we had, and it was just same. It was the same all over again. All of us going out and eating barbecue and doing more drinking than we should have been doing. But hey, you know,
why not?
It's all part of the good life. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, a movie that references in its names a lot of the people that you've worked with. You know, you've got obviously JC is a nod to Carpenter, and you've got your characters, last name is Cameron, Landis, Raimi.
I know. Fred put that stuff everywhere. And I had all of the wonderful lines in that movie.
Yeah.
I said, oh.
The good
God.
News is you're dating.
Well, girls, I got good news and bad news. And all. Oh my God, we just had so much fun. I was at a grocery store a couple of years after that came out, and waiting to check out, and this woman came up to me and she said, throw me. I said, oh, you like that movie, huh? She's rooting around in her purse, and she pulls out this pen and it says thrill me on it.
Wow.
And her and the name of her real estate company or something. she said, I have hundreds of these and I give them out to all my customers. I said, oh, good for you, kiddo.
Nice.
Good for you.
Well, it's funny. It's funny all the little corners that these cult films end up finding themselves in.
Yeah.
Tom, if you have just sort of 10 more minutes, thank you so much for your time, by the way, and just fantastic. I have a couple of questions from our online group. Some of my listeners and things have just a couple of questions. Is that okay?
Sure, okay, go ahead.
Cool.
Yeah.
So one of them is Eric Foster, who's actually lives out in Pennsylvania, and he didn't have a question, but he wanted to know if you still had the outdoor lighting package on your home, because he was the gentleman who sold it to you, and he said that you had a wonderful chat that night. So do you remember? Eric?
What's his name?
Eric Foster.
Sure. I do remember Eric, yeah. I do have the outdoor lighting package. I was just out there admiring it the other night. It's still up. We still have Christmas up. I was telling a friend in Richmond who also got hit pretty good, I guess, with this storm that you guys got. I went out and took a picture of the dog and the house and the lights last couple of nights ago. So Christmas will be coming down later this year because it's too damn cold to go out there and play with the lights and stuff. So I'm just going to leave them up. Yeah, I still have that. I still have that package. Hello to Eric.
Excellent. My friend Jim, who often co-hosts the show with me, he wants to know about the ninth configuration. He loves the film, but he said, was it as crazy to work on as it is to watch?
I swear to God, I would like to. I just don't have it in me. I like to think I have a way with words at times. I would like to write a book about the making of the ninth configuration. I have always thought that a movie about the making of the movie, the ninth configuration, would be a better movie than that movie turned out to be. It was one of the all-time life experiences and memories of my life forever. Two and a half months in Budapest with 22 angry, drunk men.
Well, there's your tagline.
Surrounded by Soviet spies.
Wow.
And, oh, my God. The trouble we all got into was just... oh, my God. Yeah.
Fantastic.
It was a wacky film.
Well, that needs to be your next project, Tom.
Everything about it. Yeah.
That needs to be your next project to write that.
Blatty wanted to... he thought if he took everybody over there for 2.5 months, he would get a great ensemble acting effort. in many people, including me, whose roles would have shot maybe 2 weeks in the States, were over there for 2.5 months. And you think, oh, well, it'd be great. I'll go to Czechoslovakia. I'll go to Moscow. I'll go to Denmark. I'll go to Paris. I'll go everywhere.
Yeah.
Because I'll have a lot of time off. But then, no, that doesn't happen because they decide to shit starts getting behind. Hell, it was behind the first day. And the shooting schedule for the next day is up at midnight the night before. So you can't really plan to go anywhere. And it was totally insane.
Tyler would like to know, you've worked in a lot of action films, Lethal Weapon, Striking Distance, and also Walker, Texas Ranger, and Drive Angry. Do you have any stories about working on those films and also their unique, iconic stars, Mel Gibson, Danny Glover?
Danny Glover, worked with him twice. He was a terrific guy to work with. I did Lethal Weapon, then we made a movie a couple of years later up in Canada. In Montreal, La something prison, we shot a prison movie where he was a shrink, and I was the head guard, and Ruben Blades was a condemned killer. And it was Danny's job to get Ruben deemed sane so that we could execute him. Don't ask me. I don't. Yeah, it's the weirdness of the Justice Department, yeah. I guess, that if he was insane, we couldn't kill him. But if he was sane, we could kill him. So it was, that was the crux of the film. It was called Dead Man Out. Mel Gibson was, he was on the edge. I only had two scenes. They were golden scenes in Lethal Weapon, but he was on the edge of both of them.
Yeah.
Standing out on the rim of the counter at the bank and standing outside at the edge of the yard at the wake where Gary Busey shot me from the helicopter and I got dead. But nice guy, smoked too much, but we all did then. But I remember one of the things he had on the set at his little trailer was a trampoline, a little one-man trampoline, personal, you know? And he would just kind of bounce up and down on that all the time when he wasn't on the set.
Yeah.
And I said, man, what? It's a hell of a workout. He said, yeah. He said, it is. That's why I have it. He said, it keeps, in order for you to keep jumping up and down on it, every muscle in your body is working at keeping your balance, your level of bounce and rise. And he said, it's a terrific workout for your whole body. And he was in great shape then, young and really fit. And, yeah.
Yeah.
The other is Striking Distance. That was great fun. Again, shooting here in the Berg. What's his face? Who's the star that
Bruce
remind
Willis.
Me? Bruce Willis, yeah. He was, working on the river with Sarah Jessica Parker, and I played Uncle Fred. I look good in dress blues, I'll tell you. And we had a great time down at the point, what they call the point where the three rivers in Monongahela, Allegheny meet to form the Ohio.
Yeah.
And we had this big party, supposedly the policeman's ball or whatever it was outside at the point. And Tom, can't remember his name, last name, Tom something. He was one of the guys in the film, one of the cousins, nephews, brothers, was supposed to get be drunk and make a speech on top of a table. And he decided
Tom
to
Sizemore.
Get drunk.
Yeah.
Tom Sizemore. So he did get, he really got tuned. And, oh, God, now these names are escaping me. But me and the guy who was actually a cop from Chicago died a year or two ago.
Dennis Farina?
Yes, Dennis Farina.
Yeah.
Farina and myself were both cousins or something, and we were supposed to help Tom get up on this table to make his little speech, and we would just give him an extra little shove so he would go off the other side and we'd have to start over again. We had a good time. We had a lot of fun making that film. Good guys on it.
Yeah.
Dennis Farina was a terrific guy, really. You got to know him a little, and he was great. Yeah, good guys. A lot of fun.
Well, thanks so much, Tom.
John, it was great talking with you.
Oh, man, that was a
really
pleasure.
Nice. I'm glad we were able to do this.
Me too. It was a real pleasure, and thank you for giving us so much of your time. Have a great time, Tom, and all the best. So there you have it. That was our awesome conversation with the engaging and fantastic Tom Atkins. Please do not forget to check out his films Encounter and Poser, hopefully both of which will receive a 2018 release as soon as we know more. We will post it on our website aftermoviediner.com, but you can always check out Tom's IMDb for updated information on Encounter and Poser, which should be coming out this year. Keep on aftermoviediner.com for further information should we get it. Also, check out aftermoviediner.com for more of these interviews. If you've enjoyed this conversation, we have spoken to, for example, almost everyone to do with Maniac Cop. We've spoken to Bruce Campbell, Robert Davi, Bill Lustig, all sorts of different people to do with that franchise. We've also got some fantastic interviews coming up that are in the works. You heard me speak about the Larry Cohen one, which we're planning, but we should have some others down the road. So please do subscribe to Booth Talk from the After Movie Diner on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and wherever podcasts are found. And if you'd like to support us so that we can keep doing this and keep getting the great guests that we've been having on the show, please do check out patreon.com/aftermoviediner. That's patreon.com/aftermoviediner to get early access to interviews such as this and exclusive content that nobody else gets, as well as the regular subscribe podcast of After Movie Diner and Booth Talk from the After Movie Diner. That's over at Patreon, patreon.com/aftermoviediner. Otherwise, there are ways to donate on the website. There is merchandise you can buy on the website, and there is music you can check out and purchase either on Spotify or Bandcamp from myself. Anyway, that's everything. Please do spread the word. Tell everyone about Booth Talk from the After Movie Diner and this interview with the awesome and fantastic Tom Atkins. Thank you so much for listening.